everybody. Welcome to the Environmental Advisory Committee meeting. It's 4 o'clock on Thursday, November the 14th. I would like to call this meeting to order and acknowledge that the press and the public have been duly notified of the meeting in accordance with the Freedom of Information Act. The first item on the agenda is citizens' comments, and I think that we have two people who would like to speak today.
Mr. Redford, if you approach the microphone there, you can use that and just make sure you're speaking into it. Your comments will be limited to 3 minutes.
Good afternoon. My name is Tucker Redford, and I live at 511 Carolina Boulevard. I believe most of you may have seen the letter that I sent you last month, apparently 1 hour after the deadline for the last meeting, but that's okay. I'll go ahead and skip to a couple of places here. I originally came to this committee because I thought there was a problem with the law that really needed to be addressed, and I also wanted to make sure that we were looking after our canopy. Since that time, I now understand that this committee is an advisory committee and does not set policy. I've also set time in front of the Public Safety Committee, did not get to present to them because they did not have a quorum last month, but I've also had multiple exchanges with Douglas, and I guess this is what I want to leave with you in summary, in case you didn't have a chance to read my letter. Right now, the code for trees on Isle of Palms has a gap, and if there is a serious safety concern about a tree that's not necessarily dead or necessarily diseased, but a tree that maybe is in the wrong place, you can't remove it. That's the way the law is written. Hazardous is defined by the city as endangering a permanent structure. It does not take care of limbs falling on my head full of pecans during October and September. And that's the problem that I'm dealing with here. I've had some very heavy limbs fall out of this tree and almost hit me. I've had pecans all over the driveway and sidewalks injure Amazon drivers. There's a lot of liability associated with this pecan tree because it's 3 feet from the main walkway into my home. And right now, I cannot get a permit to remove that tree because the law does not see it as hazardous, because the law only looks at it as, is it a danger to a permanent structure? Now, that's subjective in my own eyes anyway. This is a three-trunk tree leaning toward the house, and if it goes the other way, it's taking out the power lines. It's a pecan tree. It's not native to the island. It is not supposed to be planted in thin sands with high water tables. Somebody planted this tree in the 80s. It really doesn't belong where it is. I'm not saying we should cut down all pecan trees, but as a homeowner, I should have the ability to cut down a tree that's hazardous to me, my guests, and my family. And when I can't do that, and I get a no answer, there comes some liability with that. As a citizen, I don't want this city to get sued by whoever walks up my driveway and turns an ankle or gets hit by a limb. That to me is some exposure. And I think the law needs to take into account that maybe some pecan trees should be treated like pines and be allowed to be taken out.
Sorry.
Matt and Douglas need an avenue to do that.
That was very clear. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, very well stated. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Mrs. Coates.
Thank you for letting me speak. I was not aware of the requirement to the permission the day beforehand, and I'm sorry. Thank you for allowing me anyway to speak. I am James Coates. This is my wife, Judy Coates. We live next door in the Pink House, which we bought 42 years ago in 1982. And I'm concerned about the cutting of the palmetto trees, and I became curious as to the growth rate of the sable palm. I found it's very difficult to find definitive study on growth rate. Can I do a handout?
Please? Sure, thank you.
Sure.
I think we got
a copy of that.
Okay. Not everybody did.
Oh, no? Okay.
Well, the thing is that you can go on the internet and find all kind of growth rates 1 to 2 feet a year, 1 inch a year. It's all over the place. Like I said, it's many of these things are just in discussion groups, just people's ideas. This article from University of Florida cites another article. It was supposed to be a study. How accurate is? I don't know, but that was the closest thing I could find to something that looked academic. I wanted to share with you our own experience with growth rate. This picture I took after Hugo was either in October or November, after Hugo's, before the snows in December. That tree in that picture was about roughly 26, 27 feet high. The roof line of our house, this pink house right here, is 26 feet. As a matter of fact, I think you can see the palmetto tree on the question. This is the palmetto tree today. That palmetto tree, and go on the roof and stand on the highest part and see the top of that tree. So that tree, now these things are any distance or whatever I give, there's got to be an estimate. But to my eyeball, that tree is 26 feet plus 6 feet. It's 32 feet. So I think that in 35 years since I took the first picture, that tree has grown less than 2 inches a year. That tree started out as a mature sable palm. If you look at the first picture from 1989, there are no boots on that tree.
Mr. Coates, you're going to need to wrap up your comments, please. They're limited to 3 minutes.
I didn't hear.
Your comments are limited to 3 minutes. If you could please wrap them up. Thank you.
Okay. So, thank you.
Mr. Coates, real quick, what is it that you're communicating? It's not clear.
That Dominion is overstating the growth rate. They're cutting down trees that are far from the lines, 10, 15 feet, and they're cutting them down because they grow so fast. Well, some of them may because they grow at different rates depending on their maturity. But these mature trees, they'll be decades before they can grow 5 feet more to get to the lines.
Clearly understood now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next item on the agenda is the approval of previous meetings minutes, and this was October the 17th, 2024. Did anybody have any corrections or additions to the minutes?
No.
Okay, all right. Is there a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion to approve previous minutes.
Is there a second?
A second.
All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Does any opposed?
I abstain. I wasn't at the meeting.
All right. Next item on the agenda is a presentation by Susan Hill Smith. And is Susan on audio or
I
audio
think so.
And video?
Susan, can you hear us?
Yes, I hear you. Can you hear me?
Yep, you're loud and clear.
Yeah. Susan, thank you for being here today. I'm sorry you're sick.
Thank you.
We were wondering if it might be possible to have the limit the presentation to about 10 minutes, maybe with some opportunity for questions.
This shouldn't take too long.
Okay,
I just wanted to go ahead and get the ball rolling.
Okay.
Because while it's November, in the bigger scheme of things, if we want to try to employ people for the summer who are students, we're going to want to try and get this program set up in the next few months. So I recognize that you guys probably aren't planning to meet in December, but
okay.
Also, so.
I think we are. But that's
oh, you
okay.
are?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, okay. So we could definitely follow up then. But the other time thing was that Palmetto Pride, let me step back. I'm suggesting a program. I've already mentioned it to Desiree, and she was the one who suggested I reach out to Palmetto Pride to see if they might be able to help with grant funding for it. But to have a student-driven seasonal litter program where the students work part-time, maybe 20 hours a week for students, and that they help us with something that the city really has never done before, primarily, which would be to pick up litter on Front Beach or any beach front, but and try to get it at it at a regular on a regular basis. So currently, to my knowledge, the only litter collection that goes on the beachfront is the volunteers with the Isle of Palms cleanup crew. And the city does pay for some litter collection in the commercial district, but just in the parking lots and streetscape. Douglas, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that they that's probably just seasonal. I know it was maybe limited to once, maybe twice a week, kind of a pass-through of litter collection in those areas. So in addition to the beach, there's also, I think, room to do more litter collection, regular litter collection in the commercial area. And those students could also potentially be used for the marina to help collect litter in the marina parking lots and in the marsh area around the marina. And that's, to my knowledge, is not really going on regularly as it should be. But it could be an educational program. The South Carolina Aquarium is on board. Their conservation team, Isle of Palms cleanup crew, could assist with the education component. And we might want to try to engage a local college professor. I think easily the students could be requested to come to some civic meetings as well. So all of this could be a real like feather in their cap if they're interested in doing an eco or conservation or civic career. So I think the target group would be either later high school, but probably college students. And so far, and just do the 10 weeks, probably from mid-May to mid-August, which would fit with their schedules and would also be when the litter collection is needed the most. As I mentioned in my note, that potentially we might want to think about trying to engage Wild Dunes in having and joining the program, but that could be something that maybe would be best to do in the second year. And then the data collection would be a part of it, using the South Carolina Aquarium Conservation Team's litter journal, collecting the data on what they're documenting, the data of what they're collecting. But that data could be very useful in terms of showing the additional amount of litter that a paid team like this could pick up, in addition to what we've been doing as volunteers through Isle of Palms cleanup crew. It might also be good to have be able to gauge the difference between when we have trash cans on the beach. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the next year will be the last year that you have that will have the same beach trash can set up. But we could then get a control, robust litter data for that year, and then compare it once you make changes to the next year, which I think would be valuable to us, but also valuable to other cities, beach communities that are also, you know, trying to figure out the same questions that we are in terms of whether trash cans should be on the beach or off the beach. So, and Palmetto Pride, I'm not quite sure if this is going to work out for them to fund us. It seems like we might not match up exactly with the grants that they offer, but I didn't get a no from them, so it's worth a shot. But I'll need the city probably to be involved with, you know, submitting for the grant. And ultimately, another opportunity might be to reach out to Lens. But at the end of the day, I don't think that the cost would be too prohibitive for the city. If we just, given that we're limiting this to a 20-hour work week for four students for a very limited amount of time of 10 weeks, and could maybe be a stipend of around $3,000 per student or an hourly wage that is similar. I think that might work out to about $15 an hour. And then if it's a student who's, then they could also supplement their income with doing another part-time job. So that is, just wanted to bounce that off of you all, get your feedback, and then engage the city in helping with applying to this grant program that Palmetto Pride has.
So Susan, excuse me, this is Sandy. I have a question for you. We looked into the Palmetto Pride projects a couple of years ago, and what we were told at that time was that the grants could not be used to fund something like a salary, because we were wanting to know whether or not we could get some additional funding for a salaried person to assist during the peak season in the summer. So you said that they did not tell you no, but did they tell you yes when you talked to them? I'm just curious about
Sarah Lyles is
yes,
who I was
yes.
been
uh-huh.
emailing with, and it seemed like a question mark, like it might be worth a shot, but it's not necessarily a given that we'll get it. And I think we might be a little bit out of the target range. I mean, we may have missed the deadline, but I did not get a no. So
yeah.
I think it might be worth it.
It would be nice to have something that's more definitive, I think, if we were going to spend the time to put together a proposal. I don't know if there's a possibility of maybe having a second contact with them to get a more definitive
yes.
answer.
I can definitely follow up with her and try to pin her down more. And then if it's a no, or most likely no, then I think we would, I had mentioned this to, I think I mentioned this to Ted Kinghorn with Lens, and didn't get a yes, but didn't get a no, got maybe a, that's interesting kind of a response. And perhaps, I mean, I don't know if the city staff might know of other potential grant places we could look for grants. I mean, at the end of the day, I think it would be nice if we got grants for this, but we're talking about not a lot of money. I think that the city should be able to cover, and honestly feel like the city ought to have been for many years now doing more to collect litter, both on the beach and in especially the commercial areas and the parking lots, where the city is making well over $1 million to probably by the time prices go up next year, $2 million in parking fees. So this is really compared to that, to the amount of money that they're making by drawing visitors in and charging them for parking. This is a really small amount, but certainly would be nice to cover with grants.
Does anybody else have any questions for Susan? Anybody else? Okay, no. All right, thank you, Susan. We appreciate your presentation. Feel better. Have you feel better? Oh, thank you. Yeah, absolutely.
Who should I follow up with? Douglas, would I follow up with you, depending on what I hear back from Palmetto Pride?
You know, I guess, yes, follow up with me. I'm not sure exactly what the request is of the city. I mean, if this is a new service by the city, I mean, seems like there's a multi-layer thing of internships and money and grant writing, and if at the end of the day it is the request for 20 hours of cleanup, that's kind of a, you know, we can try to work through that.
Right. I had mentioned it to Desiree initially, I wasn't coming at it necessarily from the internship angle, and she was the one who kind of steered the conversation towards more of something like that with a stipend.
Yeah. So I guess from my perspective, the amount of money is probably not the main issue. Probably the complexity of adding additional services. It's more people to manage. It's just generally more bandwidth in the time of year that we're already, you know, scrambling. We're kind of, the city is built to basically eke through those summer months because we're at our very edges of being able to pick up trash, pick up debris. I think debatably we're not meeting the goals for those few months, but people kind of know in the off season we'll catch up. We get back to, we kind of get our head above water. So from my perspective, while it, you know, we would love to kind of work with students, and obviously cleaning up, and there's a lot of benefit to it, it's a challenge of bandwidth at that time of the year. So if there was a, if, you know, and that probably would be solved with finding a third-party vendor that just we outsource it to.
As far as coordinating the student's cleanup?
Yeah.
Schedules and things
right.
like that.
Kind of, you know, if you've got whatever, four people kind of reporting to somebody during
right.
the day, every day, or 4 days a week, or whatever it is.
Right.
That coordination, you know, and there's, you have the liability of folks working for the city. So I guess I would want to understand what the end goal is, and if the end goal is additional cleanup during our busy time, we probably would just look to outsource that from sheer simplification.
Yes, I mean, I guess one of the main goals would be to have regular litter cleanup. It's not something that you can catch up on. Part of the issue is that when you have litter that's on the beach with tides every day, you're definitely losing a lot of litter that is going into the ocean and into the dune system and becoming, you know, embedded in the ecosystem. In addition to the fact that from a beautification and a tourism standpoint, it is much better to be actively collecting litter, you know, through the week instead of just relying on volunteer cleanup. I think that while we are doing maybe better than some coastal communities, there is much more that we should be doing in terms of litter collection on a regular basis. And I, you know, if the city was going to offer a robust program of litter collection through the week, I, you know, could be very satisfied with that. This, I think, has the potential for multiple wins and less cost in terms of being an education program that includes data collection and engaging students and giving them an opportunity to get involved in conservation issues.
I think
multiple wins. Yeah.
I feel like I see from what Douglas is saying is that, you know, if we hired someone, you know, a company or, you know, employees to actually perform this work versus having students that are in, it's an internship. So if it's an internship, they have to be under someone. And
right.
who that works for the Isle of Palms right now has the time and you know, the bandwidth to monitor interns. And that's, unfortunately, I don't know who that would be. So So I kind of feel like we're in a situation where we have to find someone to monitor the interns first or at the same time.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point. I think part of this, one thing that could be possible that, I mean, a local college professor might be able to help, but obviously wouldn't be able to do day-to-day overseeing of students. And so I recognize that that is an area that we would need to figure out. But at the same time, I think in talking to Desiree, she had mentioned limitations with current staff at Public Works not being able to drive and get places, and also adult staff that was creating some difficulties in overseeing. I can say that Douglas, if I'm not mistaken, it's a contracted landscaping crew that is coming through and picking up some litter once a week during
that's
the busy
correct.
Season.
Yeah, that's correct. The parking management company we use has various services that they also, I mean, there are kind of different avenues that we can look at just paying to do it. But again, kind of this idea of an internship, and who would be providing the kind of educational aspect of that?
Isle of Palms Cleanup Crew and the Aquariums Conservation Team, we could definitely assist with that, no problem, if that's amenable. And again, this was kind of what the direction that Desiree was steering me in. Ultimately, I really just want to see regular litter cleanup that's not going on at Front Beach. But this did seem, with Desiree's suggestion, that maybe would be a good way to go.
I just want to make a comment, and before I know we have to get to the business, but we have tons of data. We have a lot of data on litter. Probably one, right? I mean,
Susan's got,
if we feel that there's a litter issue and it needs to be addressed, then I think that's first. And the second thing is, yeah, there's a service that we feel is cost effective and will do the work for us. And we don't want to add more headcount into the city. I think interns, I mean, I would want an internship. I spend all my time on the beach. We're going to give them a quota, you have to do 10 pounds of garbage a day. It'd be very difficult. I mean, I'd spend all my day on the beach. I'd take that internship. You wouldn't see me all day. But I do think if we have a litter issue, then that we should acknowledge it and make a recommendation to the council that we need to address the litter issue. And one of the things is to outsource it. Maybe it's just during the season and we don't have time to do it, so that the tourists who come see us in our best light. I think you can make a justification for that. I just want to add that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Doug. I appreciate that. Susan, thank you so much for your presentation.
Do you have a question?
I mean, my only question was whether you think there's any possibility of the cleanup crew plus the SC Aquarium being in that sort of supervisor role of the interns.
I mean, I would be willing to do it. I'm not sure what the, I'm not sure how that would work exactly, but I mean, I'm open to that opportunity or that possibility. Personally, I don't know if I could do it on a daily basis.
Right, and that wouldn't be really an efficient use of time. But I mean, I see the possibility here of, if the program works out, if these students are interested in doing this work, they're effectively mm-hmm. doing the work, and they're getting educated along the way, I wouldn't think a supervisor would have to be out there with them all the time, mm-hmm. but they would have to sort of be keeping track, checking in on a weekly basis. So I see the...
I think there's more that needs to be fleshed out, frankly, personally. Mm-hmm. I see some merit with that, and I know, and then I see the other side, on the one hand, on the other hand. So I think it's worth exploring what the possibilities mm-hmm. could be on either side of the discussion.
Put this on the agenda for next meeting to actually discuss it?
Or would it be more realistic to have Susan be in contact with Douglas?
Yeah, that would be fine.
Okay.
Yep. When it just occurred to me that potentially, I know, and Belvin, you may be more familiar with this, is it the Sustainability Institute?
Yeah, they have an AmeriCorps program.
Maybe we could engage with them, and they could help us with the supervisory piece of it,
possibly. I know they're stretched pretty thin, and their focus is on sort of infrastructure, you know, like reef builds and whatnot.
Okay.
I don't think they're in the litter game, but it's worth asking. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Susan. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Feel better.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is old business, and first we have wildlife.
Just two really quick things. As y'all may remember, Charlene Johnson is coming tomorrow morning, and she requested three helpers. So we've got Laura Lovins, Debbie Suggs, and me. We're going to help her do whatever she needs to do. She's bringing supplies and pine straw. We're going to do the garden, change it. We'll make it look better, I think, and put it to bed for the winter. So that'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to learning about how to do that.
Me too.
The other thing was I got a call from the Army Corps of Engineers people on Monday that there was a dead sea turtle at Rich Inlet. I went over there, and it was not a sea turtle. It was a marsh terrapin that had washed around from the marsh and stranded on the beach. But it was good because I was able to get a genetic sample for a research project that we're doing now for the last few years on diamondback terrapins that live in the marsh. So I sent that in. Well, I have it to send in, but I sent the data into Georgia, and it was a good thing. And fortunately, we haven't had any of those. I'm hearing that from the people on Sullivan, that they're about finished over there. Do you know when they're going to start? Have they told you anything about that?
I have not heard they're almost finished. They were a third done last Wednesday, one third done.
Because I heard they were finishing the second section and moving on to the smallest third one.
They have had production problems, and I think I would know if they
just
had greatly accelerated it, but it's been slow going for their production.
Well, we're still having dead sea turtles too, because some of them haven't migrated, so they could find one, and I'm glad they have my number.
Yeah.
Good. We'll take care of it if they do. That's it.
One question.
Mm-hmm.
You said the garden tomorrow they're doing?
Mm-hmm.
What time?
9:30. Yeah, we're bringing gloves and
watering cans.
And
how much time? How long do you do? Hour?
I can stay for. I'm gonna stay
it'll
for
probably
like an
take
hour
most
and a half.
Most of the morning. She wanted three helpers, and we got it, so I think we're okay. She's not going to do compost. It's just pine straw mulch and cutting down and doing whatever we're going to learn what we're doing.
Right.
So no plants for the winter? Or no, no?
Well, nothing actively grows in the winter. We've had a lot of fall bloomers that have finished and a lot of annuals that are dying, but that's the seeds are being left there, and we'll find out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's bringing a few perennials. I was hoping she wasn't going to plant a whole new
crop
garden because it's a lot of maintenance, especially when it didn't rain for all of October.
Yeah.
And we
we're making up for it
away.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. I'll tell you in December what happened.
So, Mary, I know last time we talked about a little bit about using some native plants in the areas around the Isle of Palms connector, those beds that are maintained by Public Works. Are we doing anything with that? Or?
Not to my knowledge, it's not the right time of year to be doing it.
Okay.
You know, in the spring, things can be planted. We can discuss that further when the time comes.
Sounds
getting
good.
Closer.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so next item on the agenda is litter, and you guys received we've got a handout. I also sent it in via email last night. So Robert and I spent some time looking at the location of the cans on the beach and talking about the possible receptacles for litter, some of the things that we are trying to keep in mind as we go through this process, as we're trying to think about how we can have a process that's going to be efficient for whoever is going to be responsible for emptying the cans. We're trying to make sure that it is that there are environmental protections in place in terms of having the carts or the cans covered, having them in a position where they're not going to be susceptible to turning over and kind of strewing stuff all over the beach. So cost is another factor. You can spend a lot of money on a trash can, I've learned. And then we also have the opportunity to come up with a plan that's going to be more attractive than what we currently have. So one of the things that has been proposed is that we make use of the roll carts like we currently have and use a corral that also will have the information regarding visiting the beach and sort of the rules of the beach. That information piece on the corral would serve to hide the can from the view as you're passing along, going down the roadway. So one thing we considered. We considered this primarily for beach accesses, whether it be at the street or whether it be located behind the dune. We were looking at this type of cart. We talked about a little different cart that could possibly be used in the commercial area, kind of between the Windjammer and sort of the end of that little strip there before you get to Sea Cabins. That might be something like a can that is enclosed, but sits inside of an enclosure that has a top where you can deposit litter, like a flap or what have you. You can deposit the litter directly into the can. Because that area doesn't really lend itself to a canal because you've got visibility on four sides if it's in the median area of the street. So we probably would like to have some type of hybrid system, but being mostly consistent with this type of arrangement on the beach accesses, that parking lot where we have the municipal parking lot, we looked at that as being something that could accommodate maybe a system like this, but just the only place we would have something a little bit different would be the commercial area. So then we went around and visited all the beach accesses, and we came up with a suggestion for where the cans might be placed. And the things that we tried to keep in mind were, was the beach access lining up with a cross street? So some of the beach accesses don't do that. So you don't have as, and particularly around Ocean Boulevard, where there's no parking on the street, you don't have quite as much foot traffic there. So we were looking at things such as if a path is an ADA path, having a beach can at the street side and also having something behind the dune, close to the boardwalk or on the boardwalk, coming off of the beach, because we feel like somebody that has a disability may have more difficulty with removing trash from the beach if they're also trying to take care of somebody who maybe is in a wheelchair or something like that. Robert told me about this. I thought this was so interesting. The disappearing beach access path, which has been a beach access path that has been paved and used by a homeowner for a driveway.
Is that legal?
No.
I wouldn't think so.
Where's the disappearing path?
Number
26.
At 26.
I didn't know there was ever a path at 26.
I think it's my neighbor's.
It is actually legal. I mean, his use of it as a driveway, there was there's some history there that he has the right to drive over it, can't block it, but he has an ingress egress easement over our easement. Mm-hmm. So it's a dual use easement right where the driveway is. So it kind of predates it's a very
like
old driveway.
23rd, yeah.
But it disappearing right is not proper. Just his driveway being across it is okay.
Right. I think it was actually, people were actually directed to the neighbors.
Yeah, that's not correct. That's not proper.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be doing that. But
yeah.
Who's the right of way, please?
Douglas. Douglas does everything.
Yeah, Robert. Douglas. We've been.
So when you're saying off the beach but behind the dune, you mean basically beach side of the dune, like ocean
landward of the
dune. No, I think the other side of the
landward.
Dune. Landward.
Oh,
the road dune. Side of the dune.
The road yeah. side of the dune.
So,
so it'd be kind of hard to see from the beach.
No,
but
because you've got a long path.
Street
some places you have a long path.
So you got some right at the edge of the pavement and then some out by the dune but just on the land side of the dune so you don't see it
okay.
when you're on the beach.
So nothing actually on the beach.
Correct.
Correct.
The problem with having stuff on the beach is that it, you know, as you know, it turns over. Right now
yeah.
it's open. If you have a high tide, then oftentimes those cans have to be moved. We have got a couple of really high tides.
I guess I'm just
out.
Wondering how those, if it's, so I understand what you're saying. So basically, like at 25th, for example,
uh-huh.
you can take your golf
mm-hmm.
cart all the way,
mm-hmm.
you know,
halfway
more,
yeah,
through
yeah.
the dune. So that's kind of what you're, the area.
Yeah, exactly. So at 25th, through that area
be?
Where the golf cart turnaround is, that could potentially be a place where you had a corral and you had some cans there closer to the beach, because that's a pretty heavily used
Do we have a way of accessing those? Because I know the beach has been an issue with.
Oh yeah, so we looked at. So when Robert and I were riding around, we looked at areas. If we had a can
yeah.
that we needed to service that was behind the dune, we looked at having it at an ADA access, which is going to be a hard access, either with a boardwalk or. The netting
Moby
or whatever, what do you, yeah,
Moby
the
Moby
mat, yeah, or whether or not it was like large enough. The one at 25th is large enough to for a vehicle to back down that access to pick up the trash. If you have something that's hard, you know, sort of a harder surface, you could potentially take the roll cart and roll it to the street if you couldn't get a vehicle back there. So that was those were some of the considerations that we were looking at when we came up with would something be located at the street side or would you have a can, would you recommend a can behind the dune or would you want to have something in both places?
And Katie, you may have, I can't remember if you were here for the discussion with, Robert had a discussion with the Kiowa, so Kiowa has a similar model. Robert had discussions with that service provider, and they kind of talked through the nuts and bolts of, you know, where could you service, where would it be challenging to service. So I think that information kind of informed
mm-hmm.
the choice of these
mm-hmm.
paths, and, you know, that's
yeah.
led to them choosing ones where they could roll a cart down or back a vehicle down.
And we had discussed too, we wanted kind of a hybrid approach to this with a combination of on the landward side plus on the street, and in other areas just the street, and that was why they've gone out and obviously looked at each path specifically
mm-hmm.
to determine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for doing that.
Yeah. Oh, we had a great time.
I guess I the first one that I saw was 42nd, and at 42nd there's the street. And then there's the beach. Like, there's not an area. I mean,
on 42nd, is that
there's
a pretty long
access? There's Moby Mat.
Moby Mat.
That's
the
right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Down Moby
yeah.
Mat.
But I guess there's not like a, it's not like 25th where you have a spot in the middle. I mean, because the street goes all the way to the Moby Mat.
I think
then,
on that one,
so are
the
you
vendor
talking,
would be going across the Moby Mat.
So that would actually
correct.
Be on the beach. So then that one would actually be on the beach.
The
I don't
vendor
know.
Would be able
I don't
to
know.
Drive out there. You know, to where the can
yeah, or you
the
could
mat
roll
there.
The can on
mat.
The mat too.
Yeah.
You know, that would be another option. But we just felt like that we should try to do something for the ADA accesses. And this is just kind of a starting point for discussion, really. And I think that it's something that could be fluid, you know, too, as people get into the process a little bit more. A couple things we had talked about with the big belly cans. They're very expensive. They're like $6,000 or $7,000 per can for the cans that actually do, you know, that actually compact the trash. We are concerned that if there was a problem with the can, that it might take some amount of time. I think Robert was told 2 weeks for somebody to come out and make repairs to the can. And that just seemed like a long time to be able, you know, to have to take something out of service like that. So we've got some people who are using it in beach communities. Polly's Island is, as well as Charleston. I'm not sure where they are in the city of Charleston. But, you know, if we, you know, we may want to just kind of keep an eye on that for future and see how it's working for those areas. And then the last note that I had here is, and this is just something that the city, I think, probably needs to think about, is that, you know, if we make major changes in what we're doing in terms of beach litter management, what would be the role of a different vendor or a new vendor in management of beach litter within Wild Dunes? And that's, I'm not to advocate for or against it or anything, but I think it's just a question that has to be identified. You know, Wild Dunes has changed a lot since we probably did our last contract with the Sweetgrass Inn. It's, you know, I imagine that there's quite a lot of litter that might be generated, and they, you know, they may need more frequent attention than other areas of the beach. You know, so the county park does their own litter management. We don't do the litter there at the county park. So it's just something to think about. You know, they want to put on a good face for their visitors at the resort. And, you know, it's not like something that our guys really have control over because it's a contract service. And they can be contacted and they can contact the service who has that responsibility. But, you know, it's more complicated, I think.
Speaking of the resort and litter, my volunteers pick up trash when they do turtle patrol, and they tell me that around the hotel is just trash. It's just horrible.
Right.
They can't begin to pick up all the stuff. There are towels out there.
Who has jurisdiction for policing the beaches? Is it Wild Dunes as a resort?
I think they expect the hotel to do it, but it doesn't happen, at least when my people are there.
I'm thinking to your question, right? Who has jurisdiction?
I mean, a litter.
Wild Dunes expecting the city to clean the litter around Wild Dunes, or are they a resort and they're their own self-sustained?
So we currently do what our vendor goes down there and empties the cans. There are cans at the beach.
About 25 cans that we empty at the, are those at the access paths, Robert?
Yes.
Yeah.
But to kind of Susan's point earlier, there is not a person, there's not a city staff or a city service that is just walking up and down the beach kind of picking stuff out of, you know, out of the sand.
We're emptying their trash cans.
We're emptying 25 of their trash cans.
Okay. And we are currently doing the county park trash cans too.
No.
Well, the ones off the beach.
Yeah, I don't know if they have any right at the county park.
I think they're roll carts that are.
Oh, theirs right there. At the bottom of their steps, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm thinking of the dumpsters.
Yeah. It's interesting in calling around and talking to some of the different beach communities about how they manage litter. There are communities where the HOAs do the beach accesses that are located within their HOAs. So it's not something that's, you know, unheard of. But it's just something I think that the city will need to think about as they go through this process. That's all I have. Anybody?
Very good work.
Yeah, thank you so much for putting this together. I think this is a great starting point.
You're welcome.
So just kind of...
Where does this go?
Yeah, kind of procedurally, I would say that we're going to have... Council is going to have a budget process that pretty much starts in January.
Yes.
If there is a, if there's consensus here and there's a budget impact, that would need to be thought through, kind of priced. The staff would need to kind of work through what needs to be in the upcoming budget. Then we have, I think this contract expires
in September.
So, you know, we'd have to back up from that several months to get to be able to get a new vendor in place. Mm-hmm. And if there was, you know, a need to get kind of hardware in place, we'd need to get that accounted for all in the time between the budget getting approved in June and them starting in September.
Yeah.
So that's kind of procedurally how it would work, but the first step would be, if you all think this is, you know, the way forward for us to work through what the budget implications are, work it into the budget, and then it would get worked into the request for proposals process, probably kind of midsummer to be.
Yeah, I think Robert has some numbers. He in terms of the corrals, and if you have the signage, it's less than if you don't have the signage. You know, so if you're installing a new corral at a beach access where there's no signage currently, then it would be more expensive than if there's already a sign there.
Are we kind of thinking that the service cost would be roughly a wash?
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of a,
I believe it'll be
close. Maybe a little bit of an increase.
It's gonna be in the cans.
I was thinking it was potentially going to be less because of the, I mean, that's the whole problem, is the difficulty of getting on the beach. And
well, there are going to be some cost savings, I think, in terms of things like what Robert's crew has to do is, like, when we have king tides and threats of storms and stuff
moving
like
all
that,
the trash cans.
Moving all the trash cans off the beach, moving all the trash cans back on the beach, you know, it's just a lot of work that just seems unnecessary. They have lots of other things you could be doing, right?
Yeah, I feel like we just need to, if this group agrees, I think we need to get this on an agenda sooner rather than later so that we can start the process of getting the corrals and, you know.
So question, do you need the numbers to take it to
the
council?
Do you need the numbers in January?
I mean, January is when it will start.
Okay.
But I mean, this is probably sufficient. I mean,
yeah, it's kind of a program. This would be a program, and then there would be the budgetary implication associated with the program.
I guess the question is just whether we have any collective edits or whether we're ready to sort of ship it off to the next step.
Right.
And I mean, it looks good to me.
I'm good with it right now.
Yeah.
We can boil the ocean. Do we need a motion?
Should we make a motion to?
You can. That would be fine if you want to recommend it. I think, that's probably good.
Well, I'm going to make a motion that we recommend the current proposal that Sandy has presented today with the different hybrid options for on-beach and off-beach litter corrals and cans.
So it's
and
two
is there
second.
Sorry.
So it's the motion is to for Katie and for the distant production.
Yeah, go through the staff. It'll start through the budget process.
Yeah, to send this to.
So is this like the picture that we're seeing? Is this a specific company, or is this?
I got that from Robert.
So that's those are the city signs. There's fencing companies that can also make those corrals. There's contractors who make those corrals. Truth be told, my son makes the signs for the city, but has nothing
they
to
look
do.
Great.
That was, you know, he made that sign too. It's his business, but. Anybody can make. I mean, obviously, all that would go out to bid.
Yeah.
There's, you know.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Is there, do you want to take a vote? Is everybody ready to vote?
I think
we have a second.
Okay. All in favor of the motion on the table, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. No,
I'd like to request, so I have to leave soon. I was hoping we could, so for one thing, the leaf blower discussion, I'd like to table that. I was hoping we could skip to the discussion on the main tree removal. Is that possible?
I can give a 30-second update more, literally. We collected the samples.
Okay.
We collected the samples, 8 of 9.
Okay.
We couldn't find one of the outfalls. We were satisfied with doing 8 of 9. we should get results back in 2 to 4 weeks, and then once we get the results back, I'll tabulate, we'll put them at the table and put some commentary and observations and present them to this group. I don't know if it'll be ready for December meeting on the 12th, but if it is, I'll accelerate the activity so we can do that. If it's not, then we'll have to push till January, and at that point we'll have to see what the configuration of the committee is. But if for some reason I'm not asked to come back for another term, I'm more than happy to volunteer still to see that project grow.
Sounds great.
Any comments or questions?
Okay.
I think we're going to talk about a bleak blower, so I can table that.
Okay,
yeah.
So you want to do that in December?
Yeah, we can put it on December.
Okay, all right. Okay. So moving on to new business then, the discussion of, and I think we were going to talk about the tree ordinance, or not the tree ordinance, but Dominion Energy palm tree removal and the power line.
You look fired up and ready to go on this one.
Well, I just have a few questions, because I know, so Sullivan's has been moving through this process, and I know that in that process, I think it was hundreds of palm trees that were originally slated for removal,
right.
Sort of negotiated down significantly. And not totally, there's still a bunch of ones
right.
slated for removal. I was wondering if there's been any similar process on the IAP side of things of challenging those original Dominion numbers.
So they basically came to the city of Isle of Palms already in the same posture that they ended with Sullivan's. So that's the kind of, if you look at what was in your packet with the, there's kind of every tree that is slated for long-term removal, category 1, 2, 3, seems like it totals to...
Well, there were 292 in the category 1, and there were 245 in the between the categories 2 and 3. So that's over 537.
Is it 537 total? So that, yes. So the 537 is kind of where they started with Sullivan's. Then they ended up saying, okay, we'll just take the category 1s now, and we're going to be watching the category 2s and 3s as they grow. Once they get into the, once they become category ones, we're going to take those.
Sullivan's did the fighting for us.
Right.
Okay. Thanks, Sullivan's.
There's also a part of that where they, you know, so Dominion agreed to giving a nonprofit of an amount, $5,000, so that they kind of showed up saying this is the deal that's been brokered through our process with Sullivan's.
They're going to remove 500 trees.
Well, they're going to remove 292,
yeah,
and then
right.
the other...
That started this week.
Yeah, the other couple hundred are in the future at some point.
Cutting the trees is one
so,
of the
And my work on my end, Belvin, was that I contacted two different home arbor companies to find out if the 245 that are in the category 2 and 3... if there would be any chance at all for them to be transplanted, because these companies have the right equipment that can go down. And the information that I received back, and they spoke directly to Dominion, that was Save a Tree. They said Dominion told them that even the category 2 and 3 trees are too tall to be lifted up without impinging on the power lines and all of that.
So bury the power
line. Okay, so I do come to this just with some degree of skepticism of Dominion's first claims, just because I think
yeah.
that they are not
yeah.
always, I mean, it does say something that's convenient for their work process
right.
that isn't necessarily like
and
the end facts.
And
so.
What I also asked, and unfortunately the arborist, the master arborist that I spoke with at Save a Tree, I asked her if she might be available to be a consultant and come out with the city and look at these trees. And she's all over the place with meetings and speaking and everything. And then so the answer for her was no.
Okay.
So then I contacted, she gave me two different other companies. One was Cold Hardy Palms. And I spoke with their office manager yesterday, and she recommended that I write an email to their general manager, James Dangerfield. And I did that. I have not heard back from him. And then there's another company called Palms Limited that Ash from Save a Tree recommended we contact. I have not had time to contact them. because what I'm trying to do is to get an independent arborist that could work with the city and our residents, who many have said that, you know, their tree really isn't an issue, and if they were to straighten the power lines, they wouldn't be impinging.
Well, I mean, this is typical of
the
power companies.
So I'm trying on the back end to facilitate some kind of an independent, you know, opinion that can be interjected into this process so that we can have additional pushback against Dominion with some of these trees to be.
Have we talked to legal counsel? What are our rights? Because why don't we get an injunction against them and to give us 90 days to review it and get an arborist?
Well, the problem is they came to the city in 2021 and told them that this was going to happen.
Yeah, and this is a cycle that they've always done. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is every few years they do this, and it's never pretty.
It's never good,
but this is kind of a long-standing process that
my additional question, and this is what I brought up to council Tuesday night, what is our posture as a city against pushing Dominion to work more quickly with these power line removals and burying them underground, because only one of the five projects that were identified back in 2021, only one has been completed, and only one of the other ones is only halfway through. And the money that's available, the matching funds, which are use it and lose it, or lose it, are going to expire in a couple years.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
So there is a revolving list of projects that that Laura's referencing, where the city pays out of, it's called a non-standard service agreement fund.
Yes, it's a non-standard. It was $637,665 in 2021 is what was in the fund.
So that's it's a little more now, but that there is a project list that the city works with Dominion. You know, what's the low-hanging fruit here? What's, which can you do relatively quickly and easily? Council has an effort where they're going to have Dominion come talk through the list, talk about the feasibility of developing a kind of comprehensive undergrounding plan. I will say the city has always, from my perspective, prioritized aesthetics, so kind of the main thoroughfare. What happens, though, and our next big project was 41st as it enters into the marina.
Right.
It's a very popular, busy part of the island, and there's a lot going on there. But what that translated to was it was $1.5 million project, very complex. They had to acquire some land. So that's kind of the next project that's on our on our list. But it's a major project. So we talked a little bit about reordering that list to put, again, some kind of easier ones up front to get those knocked out. And maybe we would start prioritizing the reliability of the service over aesthetics. Again, we've always kind of looked at prioritizing aesthetics. So that list, that issue, and that plan is something that council has always worked on. They're actively working through it now.
But this is also not something where council is just sitting around not doing anything. This is something where council is. The city is at the Dominion Energy holds all the cards and all the power. And if you don't like it, you can go find your power somewhere else. I mean, so.
On the undergrounding.
I mean, because we had the one project that was ready to go, and we're just sitting there waiting for them to do it. So there's this kind of, there's a lot of talk on the island right now that makes it sound like the city administration or council or somebody has dropped the ball on this. But I really think that the city, especially the city administration, has been working very, very diligently to try to get this undergrounding done as much as possible. Yeah. And we're at their mercy.
Sure. Well,
I do think it's a good idea to have them come talk to us, and we can start looking at you know, maybe this 41st was, we bit off more than we could chew there, and we should go look at other areas. But there's, and then there's also areas where you can't underground them. Like I was noticing when I was driving on Palm down there, mm-hmm. you know, the power lines that are in the marsh, the water table is obviously going to be too high.
Sure. Well, if we could just briefly go back to the concept of replanting these trees, I think that's important because it'll take a long time for any new palm trees to sort of grow back up to what we have here. And I mean, if it were to be the case that you manage to get someone out here who can sort of look at and, you know, make an independent assessment of, like, oh, these are actually savable, you can't let them up without hitting the power line, I mean, perhaps that's something the city could just try to go to the table with Dominion on. I mean,
that's what I'm trying.
Yeah, I feel like it'd be more a thing that the city could start to look into for the ones that are, you know, down the road.
Yeah,
the
two
in process of where we could start moving them. Did the people that told you that they could move them, though, did they talk to you about
cost?
Well, not even just cost, but, like, I mean, I know when I had 5 palms planted in my backyard, I had to water them every day.
Well, these
for
are
like a month.
These are mature, though. So
well, but that's going to be, they're going to be, I would assume the ones I had were, you know, pretty mature, and that they're going to need
some care and maintenance
after they're moved.
Yeah.
So
yes.
That's something that
so we would have to consider.
Right.
Yeah,
that's less maintenance than a bunch of new plantings, which is, I guess, what's on the table right now is paying for new plantings as an offset.
Yeah, I guess we have done that with the new ones that we've
irrigated.
Yeah.
I mean, we put bags around them. I mean, it's not too terribly, it's not too labor intensive to water them, but so I think that I believe that what we'll find is that to transplant them is, you know, $1,000-$1,500 a piece, and a new one.
It's anywhere from $600. Part of it depends on where it's moved to. It's the distance. It's not just the actual tree itself. It's how far away are you going to move it, and that's.
So what is the range you all are hearing to pay?
I had $600 to $1,500.
Yeah.
So I ask a different question of the landscaping people that I spoke with. So the question that I asked them was, what would be the difference between coming in and taking the tree down and grinding it up and taking it all away versus coming in, removing the existing tree,
right,
digging a hole, putting the tree in the new hole? And they told me the difference would be
$250. Because you're saving the money on the hauling away.
Well,
the debris removal and all that.
That seems like a very reasonable cost.
Yeah.
That's cheap. That's very cheap.
That's what I thought. I just wanted to compare reaction to
but
that.
But what I'm saying is they built onto that $250. You know, I'm asking them the difference. There's some additional costs that with replanting the tree, mm-hmm, that would, you know, they were looking at, you know, that was equivalent to what it would be to, you know, get rid of it and take it away. So that was, you know, just factored in. So on top of that cost is what I was asking. So if somebody said, I have a tree on my property, I'd like to take the amount of money, I'd like for you to give me the amount of money to remove, that you paid to remove that tree, let me use that towards replanting the tree and pay that additional $250.
That does make sense. There's one other factor. Like, I've got a builder building next to me. He's going to put palm trees up. What? Instead of him going out and buying palm trees, why not replant that lot?
Well, again, part of the, you know.
Sorry, yeah, but it's just, yeah, people just.
We're not clear as to whether these trees could be. I mean, the machine that is used, it has these huge diggers, and it digs down it lifts the root ball and the entire tree, but it has to come up.
Oh, I've seen trucks with mature trees in Florida, with the plantings, and they go around and move them around all the time.
And then they ang. Yeah. But it has to come up.
Yeah.
And if the tree
the power line is
right there,
then
there's no way for them to lift it up and take it over the power lines. And that's why I wanted to have an independent arborist be able to come out and assess these additional 245 trees to see, are they really that close to the lines? And,
right.
and could, maybe not all of them, but some of them. I mean, I'm just trying to figure a way to...
I think broadly speaking, I mean, our role as Environmental Advisory Committee would be to maximize the amount of trees
that can be saved.
That can be saved, and then to maximize the amount of new trees that can come in to replace them. I mean, those would be our just two general guidelines.
So wouldn't we just then make a motion to ask Doug and Katie to go talk to the council about hiring a consultant in the immediate near term to go out and do this work?
Before we go down that route yet. I know Douglas had something you were going to say in response to the...
So I would just say that we routinely hear that, and I don't know the last time we've asked the question, so it could be outdated information, but that it's not just $250 more to so what they're going to do is they're not going to grind the stumps. They cut them off.
No, this was not grinding the stumps.
And they chip them up and they move to the next one. So I don't think, and I think that, what we're hearing is that it's around $1,200 to transplant a tree. So if we're thinking that we're in the magnitude of $240,000 to transplant category 2 and 3 trees, I mean, again, we're kind of back to a massive budgetary implication, which...
Remember what we do.
I mean, we have 40,000-50,000 in a tree fund that builds over time as trees get.
But isn't there? I thought there was a thing like if you're taking a tree out when you build a house.
Yes, you pay
you
into
can
this.
You either put it on your lot or you can pay into
that
the
is
fund, right.
That is how that fund builds
I
over time.
I collected 30%. Yeah, the bulk of it.
Did he pay?
Of course, I have to run. I guess my hope is that, again, we like to save as much as we can, but also if Dominion came to the table with some mitigation money, just any possibility of trying to negotiate that up, that's more abatement, more trees, more palms.
Yeah,
on our palms.
In the current thinking of sustainability and climate mitigation, I mean, taking out 292 trees.
Well, it was part
it's not just aesthetic. There's three aspects. There's that part of it.
Yes.
The risk part of it with the electrical distribution.
Our tree canopy is a critical part of protecting this island during storms. It was called out specifically in the sea level rise adaptation study as something that needs to continue to be protected and or increased.
Yeah.
So taking out over 500 trees is not doing the island any good from the standpoint of being a barrier island.
Yeah.
But I'm going to continue to try and find, and I had a question as, so you said that Dominion is willing to put some funds into a nonprofit.
Right.
I think Susan, well,
it's Charleston Climate Coalition
yeah.
has reached out to
yeah.
this nonprofit.
Yeah.
And I'd be happy to, and we've done it before, we've been the pass through for tree planting on IOP.
And so then what have we heard? Have we heard from the state, from Senator Campson, or from
thanks,
Belvin?
Take care, Belvin.
As far as their willingness, as they did with Sullivan's, to put money in?
I have not heard that. I haven't heard that, I haven't heard if there's a willingness from, I think it was the DOT, and Sullivan's, I believe that. The DOT did an additional contribution.
It was a combination of the state, DOT, and then Dominion.
You think it was a...
Was the information that I had.
I mean, the DOT is the state.
Well, I meant it was...
Some other office from the senator.
Yeah, it was from Senator Chip Campson, Governor McMaster, DOT, and Dominion. were the entities that contributed $5,000 each to help plant the new palmetto trees for a total of $15,000.
That's like nothing.
Yeah. Right, I know.
We should, you know, we should write a formal letter to the head of sustainability of Dominion Resources and let them know that,
you know, they,
it's a balance. I know it's a balance, but they tend to just go in there and just, yeah, they just rip things out.
Okay, so next steps would be for me to continue to pursue the possibility of an independent arborist. Yes.
Well, I think that's where we need to go to the council.
I mean,
an independent arborist to do what?
To
see if
help the city
determine
these two and three, how many of them really, you know, they only grow an inch a year. So, you know, we, combination of, you know, do we have time to consider the possibility of transplanting them? If not, then, you know, and then an independent arborist would be able to determine, you know, are they really, truly, they can't be lifted up and taken out. And then I guess B would be for the city to do what you're already starting to do and possibly reorganize the five areas that had been targeted for moving the underground wires mm-hmm. into the ground and getting in Dominion's face to help you get the process, you know, keep them from dragging their feet.
I will say, I don't
like the council has an appetite for.
It's not something that, I mean, that's, I guess that's kind of my point. It's not something that they don't care about. It's not something that they're not trying to do already.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
the council is definitely trying. It's just,
and I mean, you know.
Something like this would have to go to the legal means.
It's,
to really make
but there's
happen.
Not, I mean, Dominion Energy, trust me, they get
yeah.
challenged on trees cutting down.
Oh,
it's every single community that they you drive through Mount Pleasant, they're
this and bird kills.
Destroying kill trees right now,
this
constantly all over
right
Mount Pleasant. So this isn't new to them, and there is no legal. You're not going to win. I mean, I not to, you know, I mean, somebody would have won it already, for sure. I mean, I think we have a chance of potentially moving some of these trees, and you know, hopefully not planting any more underneath power lines, but. You know, if we could.
Well, and that's the Right Tree, Right Place program, too.
Right.
That needs to be implemented.
But a lot of these were just there on their own, I'm sure. They
yeah. But
so
if new trees
make,
are
like
going to be planted, we need to make
so
sure. Right.
Do we want to make a motion to.
I have a question.
So back to the. So of kind of timing, you know, these category two and three trees, I don't think they're. I think they get reassessed in like
5 years, right?
Yeah, in 5 years. So there's okay. not a there's not an urgency to them.
Well,
and I guess I would also say that these are adjacent and probably on people's private property.
Okay.
So and quite frankly, we have the City Hall has one right out in front that is mangled in with two other palm trees and an oak tree. So that tree is not gonna make a difference, and quite frankly, it's. So I think of the 200 and some odd trees,
45, 42.
A lot of them probably aren't going to be missed. There probably are, if I had to guess, there probably are, you know, some in there that are in key places. They're not kind of causing any problems by our standards or. The adjacent property owner standards, but I don't know that's kind of traditionally that is a fight for the property owner. I mean that would be it would seem somewhat bizarre to me if I were to go in front of somebody else's house and say, hey, I'm advocating to keep the tree that's
okay.
on your private
yeah.
property, but in the Dominion Energy easement, the mailing from Dominion to the owners where the work is going to be done includes their arborist contact information. If we had a resource, you know, and we do get calls periodically, if we had a resource and we do have arborists that we work with of who could give them a second opinion, you know, I think that's certainly something that we could do is say, hey, you know, we know people that could help you with this. But I don't know, you know, I guess a kind of first pass if it's if we're talking about okay. hundreds of thousands of dollars to move trees that we don't currently know if they're an issue or not.
Well, also, it's not like, if it's not our property, then we
it's
can't.
Not our property. So I'm, you know, we'll kind of do whatever the will of the group is to do, knowing that if there's a budget implication, then it okay. truly is a it's a city issue. I mean, it's a council issue and a funding issue. But if it's just a matter of passing through information, I mean, we can certainly do that. If it's you know, if it's a matter of gathering information, we can do that. But if it, again, if it kind of is a got a big price tag associated with it, that's going to hit the budget, go through a process. And from my perspective of Dominion, just telling council, this is our program. This is, and again, this is they, this is the fifth time they've done this same thing where they come to the city and they say, hey, these are the trees, these are the. It's never received well, but it's kind of a fact of life living with power lines. I did not sense that there was much that it was felt that the city could do other than kind of get the same deal that has already been negotiated with Sullivan's Island. I haven't yet heard on other funding. Quite frankly, I don't know what we would do with the, like, I don't know what the $15,000 would be used for. Would it go to this project? Would it go to shifting certain key trees that are in the 3-4? I mean, that to me is a useful, once we get the money, I truly don't know what project we're going to do. Yeah. So that is something I think that this group can kind of advise
on.
Underground. Well, that's right. I mean, that's what it says. Like, where the, why not have a combination of taking trees and burying lines, where it's a, it, it's
that's
a low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, burying lines is, you know, hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
So
over a million on
electrical equivalent of sorting the island.
So with these, the trees that are in the category 2 and 3. And we're looking at maybe 5-6 years before they would potentially become category 1. What do you feel is the city's capability of, no, my question actually is, I'm sorry, do you know how many of the trees that are in these category 2 and 3 would be impacted if, as far as being saved, if these additional projects could move forward in the next 5-6 years?
I don't know. So overlaying kind of the undergrounding priorities with this list, I don't know that answer. We could certainly do that, figure that out.
Yeah, because you know, 14th is the one that's been completed.
Yeah.
And then you've started 41st, and that's the one that's
I do think that list is going to get, well, I don't think 41st is going to happen anytime soon because it's extremely complex.
So which is the one that, is it 21st? Is that the one that's happening?
Probably, no, 14th.
Which
but
one?
I think that
was completed.
No,
14th,
right,
21st was done.
Yeah.
Last
21st
year.
Was done. Okay,
yeah.
So 14th is the one that's halfway through, and then
there's a project here on Oak Harbor.
Oak Harbor Boulevard,
right
between
us.
11th and 13th Avenue.
And I don't know.
But that's a question when we have a meeting with the Dominion Energy people and discuss what we were recently discussing is the what areas seem to be prone to wind vents and losing power. And my guess would be those are probably the ones that have trees that
right.
are on the power lines. So it might be the same. There might be a considerable amount of overlap there, and that's definitely a question that we can ask.
So Douglas,
are
you saying that you might be prioritizing different areas than what
yes.
were originally?
Yes.
Yes, that is the process
okay.
that this
that's
committee
okay.
is wanting to undertake of reprioritizing that list based on power resilience. The ability
to
keep the power on versus
yeah.
aesthetics, which is the way we've always done it. And then create, instead of just four or five lists, four or five projects, have the entire island on a with a priority that we can more kind of systematically just
those five categories that they identified, are those based on risk ranking? Like
three categories?
Category 1, 2, and 3.
And it's based on the risk ranking.
By how size of the tree. It's how close it is to the power.
Whether it's, and whether
some of them are.
It's a danger for both, you know, the workers to be able to go up and work on the lines, also for maintenance, or not, landscape companies to trim the trees, and then also the possibility of the fronds, you know, interacting with wires and catching on fire.
I would, if hearing what we heard during public comment, if they're only growing an inch or so a year, I would think that in 5 years they're still going to be in category 2 or 3. That bears out to be true.
Yes.
Because they have to get into this, you know, safety zone,
five feet,
it is.
It's like 5 feet, yeah.
So if they're growing that slowly, it seems like they would move from category to category very slowly.
Yeah, it's like half an inch to an inch a year is for the mature trees.
But in the meantime, if we had people concerned about their category 2 and 3, and we had information that we could say, hey, you know, you have these trees, you might want to have a tree service look at shifting them between now and then.
Okay. And then also the trimming, because Dominion said that there's an importance of citizens attending their tree trimming workshops. Are they doing tree trimming workshops to help educate the people on how to?
I'm unaware of them. Wow. If they are, I don't know. Matt, you ever hear?
I never heard of it, no.
Because they call
Matt's
that out.
Matt's in the arborist world.
In 2021.
So did you have a question you said before?
Yeah, I had a couple of questions.
Okay, go ahead. I'm shutting up.
One question that I had was with regards to some of the trees I've seen with the red dot are not in the easement, the utility easement. They're in the middle of the front yard.
Right.
And it might be a tree that has a lien to it that's, you know, lived here over 30 years, and the tree's been there for the whole time that I've lived here.
Right.
But it has a big red dot on it, and it's in the middle of the front yard, so it's clearly on private property. So Dominion can go onto private property and remove the tree?
As they've described it to us, they in their service agreement with every customer there, so everybody out here, they have it's a certain type of easement, but they have an easement across those properties that entitles them
to be able to do that. Okay, so that was my question. The second question I had is if somebody is a homeowner, they have a tree in their yard that's been identified as one to be moved and has a red dot on it, is there any option for the homeowner to, rather than have it taken down, to move it themselves?
Oh, yeah.
Have it moved by a company?
So what we hear is that, and I think this would vary from company to company, but what we've been told by Dominion is that the OSHA standard that all of these tree companies should be adhering to prohibits them from doing it
because they say that it would have to be lifted up.
Yeah, that it's
already. I had a bunch of trees removed a few years ago and replanted, and none of them were lifted up. So that's why
probably.
I was asking.
There's probably a reality.
So I would guess.
I didn't do it, but.
Certain tree companies probably are unaware of that OSHA standard and would probably just move the tree for an owner, I would guess. But, you know, the city doesn't want to be in the business of telling owners there's a national standard there, but we don't think you have to adhere to it.
It's 5:30.
Can you throw your? Can we bring
those were the those were the
can
two
we bring
questions.
This to an action so then we can adjourn?
Those were the questions I had. Yeah.
I think it's good discussion. It's just, you know, we're on late. So is there anything we want to ask? Any resolution? Is there anything, Douglas, that?
I mean, not
Katie, that you're not worrying about already, that we're not discussing already. That
I mean, I just don't know what. I really don't know what council could do beyond what we've done. You know, I mean, if some of these trees are on city property, and the city can move them, then that would be great, you know, except for the cost. cost associated with it, whatever that is. But if they're not on city property and they're not able to be moved, I don't know what.
I think there's the reprioritization of the undergrounding, and maybe looking at that as an overlay with the trees that are in the Cat 2 and 3 in those categories, and because clearly it's taking more than 5 or 6 years to do these projects.
Yeah, to get down the whole list.
Even 5.
Yeah, they're kind of doing one small project a year averaging out to.
So maybe it would be to look at the overlay of the streets for the undergrounding in relationship to the Category 2 mm-hmm. and 3 trees.
I think that's kind of being done. I think that's underway.
Okay.
From my perspective, your kind of work that you're doing through independent tree companies, I do see value in if somebody comes out of that and says, hey, we will happily transplant trees for a very reasonable price, if at a minimum we could just disseminate that information as people contact us, hey, I have a couple of trees on the list, I'm interested in what my options are. If we had that information, I know you're kind of working through that, I think that has some value to the city.
All right, I can provide that. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Laura.
Okay.
Thank you, Laura.
So let's see, our next meeting is going to be Thursday, December the 12th. At 4 o'clock.
Does that work for everybody, or anybody out of town, or?
I may be leaving to go out of town, but I haven't booked anything yet, so I'll let you all know.
I just want to be sure we have a quorum. I'm
out of town the week before, so that's perfect date. 12th is great.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye. 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 Hold on. It's going to take me 3 years.
Off record at 5:42.